Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hockey Writers Live. I'm your host, Chris Wassel, and with us tonight, as always, is the illustrious Joshua Smith. Good evening, Josh.
Good evening, Chris. Thanks for the wonderful introduction. Appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
I'm feeling good. I'm telling you. Look, I know for hockey fans out there, and this is probably the first you're going to hear it because you've been watching football all day, and you've been looking at the amazing numbers being put up and sacks and interceptions and fumbles and, oh, God. The reality, or in this case, the time is close at hand. We are going to start losing hockey games this week. Whether it's Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, or even Friday. It's going to happen. Agreed on in 5 minutes. Yeah, we're not getting anywhere, huh? We're really not. I know some people that want to see the whole season canceled, and I can understand that to a point. I know it hurts, but I could tell you right now, if both sides cave in, Josh, and you end up with basically the same CBA as you have now, we're going back in 5 to 6 years, and we're probably losing, if not one, two, maybe three or four teams in this league. We're darn close. Because the infrastructure is not there to help these teams. And it's not just 1 year that did this. It's this whole entire duration of the CBA that has sandbagged at least a half dozen teams. It really has.
Now, when you came out of a lost season with a new CBA, with a cap ceiling for your new salary cap that is lower than the current cap floor, you've really wasted that year to get a good system in place because it's obviously not working.
This just then. Whose idea was it to double salaries in the last 7 years? That's basically what you've done in a sense. You've doubled the cap. Or just about. You know, 39, a little less than $40 million. And this year, right before September 15th, this cap was at $70.2 million. $70 million in change.
Yep, and who signed off on each one of those contracts and each one of those players' checks?
I think it was the owners.
The same guys that are trying to get back 20% of the contracts they awarded. It's when stuff like that happens that I understand where Alex Ovechkin is coming from in saying that, hey, we sign these deals, we expect to be paid these deals, and you know, part of negotiations is not rolling back and taking the salary away that we were awarded. You guys signed us to these deals, and now you don't want to honor them. Just on principle, I can see where he's coming from.
No, it's absolutely true, and yeah. I feel for the hockey fan. I know it's tough. This isn't going to be easy. And nobody expects this to be. Honestly, there's no easy answers here. And if you think there is, man, you've got to be a better person or just all-around optimist, at least right now. Because the owners don't care about October. They really don't care about most of November. Things that they might start to care about, at least the big market guys, 24/7 is going to be one thing. The Winter Classic's going to be another. They don't care about the All-Star game because of where it's being held.
Yep.
They don't care. The Jacobs, the Jacobs and the Snyders and the big Dolans do not care because basically to them, the All-Star game is held in the equivalent of a hockey Siberia this year. And that's unfair. In a sense, to categorize Columbus as that. But to them, that's how they look at it.
Yeah, and on the flip side, Columbus really needs this All-Star game to to energize the fans, to capture more of the market share in the city. And you know, for them, you know, I'm sure they're at the table trying to find some way to A, get this resolved so they don't lose their All-Star game, because yeah, they'll probably get awarded another one down the road, as has happened in years past when the All-Star game's been canceled. But by then, it might be too late. You know, 3 years from now, if Columbus isn't successful as an organization, they might not be around to have that All-Star game.
Indeed. I mean, look, I know a lot of people have a really negative opinion, Ohio. They just do. I understand that. But look at it this way. We're going to try and lift the spirits of the show a little bit. We're going to try, really honest. In case you haven't noticed, October is normally Hockey Fights Cancer Month. Well, with the lockout this year, yeah, about that. So, though there will be enough things going on, the NHL really can't get fully behind the initiative to at their full disposal to donate and be out there and promote. Leave it to one of our own guys from the Hockey Writers, Ross Benander, to come up with an idea that's generated a little bit of controversy at first, but a lot of people are getting behind it. The numbers suggest that this is going to work very well, and of course, we bring on Ross right now. You are on the show. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Perfect. All right. How are you guys doing tonight?
We'd be doing better with some hockey, but you know, we got some OHL, we got some WHL. We're doing pretty good. I mean, you know, there's some Texas State hockey that I know that is going to be getting underway soon, so.
Some Texas State hockey?
Yeah, it's an old adage or joke of I was an Amarillo. Oh,
you're
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wow, is it that loud? 6 years now. Wow.
Okay.
And I happened to get into a pickup game with some, you know, people that were playing at a rink. This was very funny.
Right.
Got yelled at by my ex-wife. She's like, what are you pulling the hockey skates out for? And I was like, well, there's a rink here, and there's some guys playing. It was like early March, so it was cool enough. I'll go play a pickup game. Why not? The pickup game turned into a beer league game, more or less, where we wound up going to one of the greatest steakhouses in the state and trying to see if somebody could eat a huge 72-ounce steak in under 30 minutes.
Yeah. What is it? I can't remember the name of that place, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
We went there.
Okay.
And each player that was there with me bet me $10 each that I could not eat it. They're like, you're like 150 nothing. Sure enough, ate it.
And it's not just a steak, is it? You have to eat more than that, right?
You have to
eat the
eat
steak
everything.
And like some hash browns or something.
Hash brown, mashed potato thing that looks like a monster. They're the vegetables, folks. It's Texas-sized portions is the best way to describe it. I took that money and actually donated it to the Live Strong Foundation, which was in its sort of infancy at the time.
Yeah, I imagine, right.
And this is,
I'm from Austin, and there's actually quite a bit of hockey here nowadays. I mean, even back when you were here, there were at least maybe 11, technically there were pro teams, I think, 10 or 11 in the state. So that's caught my attention.
This is where you know, the book, The Lone Star Skate, comes in, and I know that generates some ill will towards certain regions of Texas for the way they were represented in that book. It's a good book, but it also has its points where it's not so good. And kind of addressed that with the host when we had them on. But This is, Ross, I have to say this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hockey fans fight cancer.
Yeah.
How did this get started?
All right. Well, you know, I technically make my living as a health writer. So, and I do a lot of cancer writing for a health network out of Los Angeles. And you know, I was just generally, I know, you know, at least a month or two in advance, kind of about Hockey Fights Cancer, that it's coming up, and you know, we might arrange for a story or two to publish here or there. So it occurred to me, I don't know, in early September, I guess, that you know, if there was a lockout, that it wouldn't happen. And I just, you know, I wondered what, you know, how much, you know, the initiative actually made, you know, for the partner charities. And I, you know, wondered what they did with the money and what would happen, you know, if there was no Hockey Fights Cancer for the month, and, you know, what kind of programs would be impacted and that kind of thing. And so it was really just an innocent kind of query, you know. And so I didn't call all four of the partners. I didn't call the Lymphoma or Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, but they have two prostate cancer charities and a this year they had a Movember, but there's one more that I can't. Oh, Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, that's the name of it. Mm-hmm. So I called three of them, and then I called the NHL offices and just asked, you know, the basic question: what's you know, what happens in the event of a lockout and these games not happening? You know, because every team has a home game devoted to the initiative, and they sell off jerseys and have, I can't think of it. I've actually never been to one, you know. So they raise about $1 million or so, so I called the different charities and I called the NHL, and the response I got was very, very chilled, you know. Particularly from the NHL, they weren't really, well, nobody would address it, really, which I kind of understood, but not getting a straight answer, kind of thought, huh, you know, maybe for some reason I felt like it touched a nerve, kind of, and I thought, well, you know, if it doesn't happen, you know, there's got to be some other way to at least try to contribute, and people have been talking about what to do with their hockey-related revenue for, you know, a few months now, and so I called a friend of mine who's in graphic design, and I said, hey, I just came up with this motto, you know, and what do you think? And so I put together a logo, and off we were, you know, and I went with Livestrong Foundation because it was rather easy to set up a fundraiser through them. B, you know, I live in Austin, and you know, they're located here. And C, I really like their approach as opposed to some of the other larger fundraisers, cancer fundraisers, I should say. So that's really how it started. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I went through and looked at it. And the first thing I thought was, okay, this is a good idea. You get behind it. Start promoting it. And all of a sudden, and I knew this was going to kind of happen, you know, when you have a few connections within NHL public relations,
mm-hmm.
and they've known you for a while,
uh-huh.
you start getting emails.
You're obviously talking about yourself, not me. I don't have any
of
those connections.
You walked out on this. you know, first was Jake Duhaime, who works with the Red Wings.
Okay.
That was the first one. The second was Deanne Fott, who works with the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, and I actually know Deanne from her time here in Austin. Yeah.
Yes.
Vaguely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Deanne and I go a decent ways back.
Oh, okay.
And then there was a few others. And then I get one from the director of public relations from the National Hockey League.
Are you kidding?
Trouble. Yes, because I know him from his days of working at a certain New York hometown paper covering the beat for the New York Rangers.
All right.
This unfortunately,
I guess I'm
is where
curious.
Connections get bad.
Yeah, it's nice not knowing anybody sometimes. Well, so I'm kind of curious. What I'm surprised. What, you know, I did see like some comment from I think it was somebody from Winnipeg, you know, that was maybe posted on I forget where, but, you know, I guess I was a little bit surprised by any blowback at all. It's like, you know, why so sensitive? You know, this is, I mean, granted, okay, the motto may be a little stick it in their face kind of, you know, but it's not meant to be. I mean, it's just, you know, I said in the piece I wrote for Overtime, you know, I don't think that the side should come to CBA simply to save, you know, Hockey Fights Cancer. Not at all. You know, that's not the point, you know. So I guess I'm just a little surprised there's any sort of blowback at all. Yeah. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. This is kind of like, you don't want to diminish the significance of this ever. But in far in the grand scheme, at least in the NHL and NHLPA world, it kind of is. Yeah, they have a slightly Herculean task ahead of them in coming up with an agreement that makes everybody supposedly happy.
Right.
This is one small part that the fans are trying to get behind and do to raise some money, and nothing more. I think the best way you described it was the following. Hey, we're not looking for $50 and $100 and several hundred dollars a person here.
Right.
Small denomination donations are fine.
Mm-hmm. Preferred, even.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, ideally, I was just saying, in fact, I was saying like a couple dollars, but Livestrong won't allow that. The minimum is $5. So I was like, yeah, top it out at $5. That's it, you know. And I was hoping that will encourage, you know, as many people as possible.
Right.
Sorry,
and
go ahead.
It's fine, Ross. It's perfect, actually. Cause the whole point is just to get the message out there. Right? We have a whole month to do this.
Right.
That's the
you know, it's odd. One of the things I find kind of strange is that I'm wondering why, in 04, I think Bevin canceled October maybe 15 or 16 days before the first game started, which was on the I can't remember offhand now, but it was at least 2 weeks before. And and now we're, what, 10 days, 11 days away from opening night and still no word. So I'm wondering, you know, when those games, because I'm presuming, you know, not only October, but I mean, my own opinion, it seems like it's going to be, if anything, maybe January, you know, but that's, you know, beyond the point. Until those games are canceled, you know, it's kind of hard to be too aggressive about, you know, pushing this because you never know. And I certainly don't want, and I know that the teams do individual things throughout the season and that they can make this up if they, you know, wanted to at some other month. It's not the point. You know, the point isn't to step on anybody's toes here. It has, you know, nothing to do with that. You know, it's just it's a way to participate and not feel frustrated, you know, over this whole thing, I guess. And, you know, it would be easy to make the NHL and the Players Association look it would be easy to make them look not good, put it that way, by suggesting that look at how selfish they are. They don't care about, you know, they don't care about suffering from cancer patients. You know, that's not the case at all. Of course they don't. I mean, everybody from the worst imaginable owner to, you know, the player who's on his first, you know, two-way contract, everybody cares about, everybody's been touched by cancer. So, you know, that's not something that this is about. You know, this is just about fans still participating, you know, in some way that they can in a month where there may not be any hockey, you know. So,
yeah.
I actually wanted to get back to what the guy from the NHL said to you, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, John Talapina, who's you know, works in NHL PR, he basically is the functional director of public relations and the such.
Mm-hmm.
Was all for it, but as he said, obviously we can't actually. It's the usual standard line. It's like, well, it's a great idea, but obviously we can't support you with anything that comes from the NHL, such as jerseys, autograph pucks, sticks, et cetera.
Right.
And it's like, we understand. We wouldn't expect you to. Now, that all being said, maybe later in the season, who knows, you know, what will happen.
Right.
It's an everyday thing. Let's be honest. Cancer doesn't quit for anybody.
No. No, it's
not
just
going
not,
away
exactly.
anytime soon.
This is a lockout. Right, exactly. And, you know, one of the things I do like about Livestrong in terms of their approach is that they're, I don't want to say their motto, but one of their driving things is to improve the lives of cancer patients. And I'm not taking a shot at any other cancer charities, but I think it's really dubious when a charity is pressing for, you know, or advertising and saying we're looking for a cure. That's just a... that kind of exposes a real misunderstanding of the disease. And so, in my mind, when Livestrong, you know, wants to say, or they say, you know, we're looking to improve the life, to me, that's a very practical, it's a very realistic, it's a practical and realistic goal, you know, and as opposed, and they still do, they fund research, but they fund a lot of outreach programs, just like the NHL partner charities do. Not necessarily the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, but I know that both prostate cancer charities do that. They do a lot of outreach programs where they actually go out and, you know, they find, not find, but, you know, they sort of make themselves known so that, you know, men who maybe wouldn't have an opportunity to be have what's called a PSA test, kind of controversial test, but, you know, to have that, get that test and see if they're maybe at high risk for prostate cancer, these guys that wouldn't maybe have that chance. This is what some of that money pays for that comes from Hockey Fights Cancer. I'm not saying that this means that, you know, those funds are gone and so those outreach programs are over. You know, I don't know because nobody would call me back. But at the same time, I imagine that they'll, you know, they'll find a way around it. And I think that people will, you know, if other grassroots campaigns can crop up, that'd be great. You know, I mean, I don't certainly want to be the only one, you know. I mean, I would love to see a lot of people doing it, provided they're doing it with, you know, reputable organizations. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think for hockey fans that are frustrated that mm-hmm. aren't going to be putting that money towards the league or games or even jerseys and merchandise at this point, to take just a little bit, like you put it, of your hockey-related revenue and to put it this direction and, you know, through Livestrong, through the partnerships, through the organizations and the work they do. If you're committed and you're frustrated with what's going on with the league and you're not going to spend money to support what the NHL and the Players Association are doing right now, why not take mm-hmm. part of this and put it towards something where you can really make a difference in the lives of a lot of people?
Exactly. You said that very well, better than I have in the last few minutes here all at once. Absolutely. And that's kind of my thinking. It's like, you know, I'm not suggesting that we take you average up all your, you know, the money you might have spent on hockey and donate it, but, you know, $5 here or there, or you know, I wrote for overtime and Who Fights Hockey in a Lockout, or no, excuse me, Who Fights Cancer in a Lockout, on overtime I wrote, and I tried to itemize a lot of the different programs that are going on with the AHL and the ECHL, because they do, I mean, those leagues are like promo crazy, you know. I mean, they've always got something going on, and a lot of them are cancer related, but a lot of them are just community related. And part of Hockey Fights Cancer with the NHL is not only that they fund these partner charities, but they also give a certain amount, I forget, maybe 10, 15 grand or so, to what I'm assuming is going to be each team's, you know, foundation, charity foundation, and then they, you know, they use that money to go out to the community, and that's, yeah, that's where it really makes a difference. So, and that's the same thing with the AHL teams and the ECHL. So, you know, it's there are programs going on with those teams, particularly in October and November, although they run all throughout the season. And so there's a lot of opportunities for people, you know, to, if it means venting your frustration, you know, okay. If it means just, you know, doing it to remember somebody that you knew or that you know, or, you know, that you may know in the future. So, I mean, it's something, you know. So that was really the impetus behind the whole thing.
Exactly. We're zinging through the show at a breakneck speed. Halfway through the show, folks, the phone number, as always, is 1-347-826-7358. It seems like the phone lines always get jammed up this time of night. I don't know what it is, but hey, we'll take it. More people come in, and we're getting a rare visit from the. I can't believe I'm doing this. I promised that I would never play this on this show ever again, but nah, I'm not going to do it. It takes too long. We're not going to play the Hotel California. Timmy Rosenthal out on the West Coast this weekend. Not for EA Sports or anything. No, he hasn't gotten that decision back yet. But he is out on a little family excursion, if you will. We're going to bring him in now, and then in just a few seconds after, we're going to bring in our next guest, and we're going to overlap this somehow. We're going to turn the cancer talk into fantasy KHL somehow. I don't know how this is going to work. Say your prayers, kids. But coming to us from, I believe, the Irvine, California area would be my co-host, Timothy Rosenthal. Good evening, Timmy.
I have to give you some wise play-by-play updates for Carmen Geddon. Actually, I only have one. It's full of crap.
True. Oh, boy, Timmy.
I have actually seen worse.
Wow. Just there are words, and then there is... Wow. Okay, Timmy, we're gonna bring in my favorite XM personality next.
Yes.
And
too.
It's not just... Yes, Timmy.
It's my favorite, too.
I mean... And it's not just because he wrote a really good book called 100 Rangers Greats. It's not because he writes a whole bunch of stuff and all over the place. And it's not just because he covered some prospect type of shindig up in Buffalo this weekend. Okay, maybe. But, of course, we bring on the only person from near the Philadelphia area that I can tolerate on a consistent basis. And that would be, of course, Mr. Russ Cohen. Good evening, sir.
How are you, Tim? How are you?
You're all right, Russ, although I have to say thanks for the 49ers defense today for providing points for me as being a Jets fan that you are.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right.
That's all you're getting out of me.
Wow. I was expecting a little more, but all right, Russ. I'm going to spare you all the other football stuff.
Thank you.
Throw that out the window. I'll wait till about 9:01 to do that. Now, getting into this, first and foremost, obviously, in October, the hockey writers and lots of other fan-friendly places have gotten behind us already, Ross. Ross doesn't know this yet. Oops. But we're going to do Hockey Fans Fight Cancer for the month of October.
Mm-hmm.
Ross, with your blessing, we may go a little beyond, just depending on how, one, it goes, and two, if there is a potential for some kind of agreement.
With my blessing?
Yeah, because you started.
You have my blessing,
all.
Believe me.
I mean, we have to ask. We're not going to just...
No, totally. Yeah.
Oh.
That's outstanding. That's great.
God,
that's great news, yeah. I mean, I hope there's hockey, but...
You're not the only one. I mean, as Russ knows, and Russ, we are going to do the Fantasy KHL League.
Nice.
I am waiting on getting... See, the problem is there's more players still coming in.
I know.
I'm trying to get like a week or two where hopefully there's like... some kind of settling where you have an idea who is going to be on what team.
Yeah.
And then I
Kane
and then
Taves
I can,
are waiting now. And
yep.
Yeah.
See the problem.
But I think Evander Kane just hopped over there.
Kane is now waiting for his visa, I believe, which maybe
that could be a problem.
Yeah, maybe a problem, or it may be done by tomorrow, depending on who you believe.
Right.
I mean. We're going to have special boxes to pick NHL players because, let's face it, when the NHL players eventually go, you're still going to have to, you know, hope you drafted Alex Radulov, for example. Or,
right.
Well, some other guys that don't throw things or touch referees.
Is bonus points used for getting in trouble with late night partying out there?
Nah, that's. I'd say no.
Yeah, it's a different level in Russia. You got to really work hard to get in trouble for it.
Yeah,
potatoes are ripe out there.
Yeah, I mean, just think about the World Juniors and the flight back. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago.
That was great, though. I have to admit, as far as drinking celebrations, that may have been one of the best ones I've seen since the 1995 Stanley Cup bender that resulted in literally no DWI checkpoints, no nothing. Cops getting wasted all over the place. It was almost like 94, except this was far less organized.
Yeah. Well, we knew there was an issue because we were at the hotel, saw them that night, got up in the morning, heard they were still out and about and getting ready to board a flight, and we were getting ready to drive home, and I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you know that's
we knew. We knew.
But the goals that we're setting forth, thanks ironically to the Fantasy Sports Channel, which is somewhat helping us behind the scenes. The one on Blog Talk Radio and the one via Sirius and XM. Ray Flowers is helping push this a little bit because, as Ray put it to me, Chris, as you know, there's no fantasy hockey show until the lockout is over.
Right.
It saddens me because, you know, there's other fantasy leagues that we started and such. If you go over... Sean Gentile and company have started a fantasy AHL league. A couple of the writers, the hockey writers, have started a fantasy Memorial Cup league, which may or may not be.
What's the point of that? I mean, you got to wait months and months and months for that.
I know. But it's something to do. It's
wow.
Perfect science.
Why don't I talk about the prospect game I was at last night? Because there was actual players playing.
I know. Isn't this great? That's what we brought you on
crazy
for.
Crazy concept.
Crazy concept.
Anthony, by the way, could not make it, sadly. I think he was watching a football game.
Yeah, no, he got roped into some family commitment.
Yeah, I know. I said to him, don't worry about it. Sheesh, it's not the end of the world.
No. No, but I'll tell you, last night there were 100 credentials for scouts and NHL GMs and folks like that, and then somewhere around 50 for credential media. So it was a nice crowd. I felt good for the kids because they really they got a lot of coverage. Mine hasn't gone up yet because I'm tired. I probably will last 20 more minutes, and then I'll probably, after I tell you about it and tell you about guys, I probably won't write anything until tomorrow, but
right.
It was a well-organized event. It was really good. And I have to tell you, like 12 years ago when I started hockey writing and just writing in general full-time, you couldn't have had a game like that. There just wouldn't have been enough U.S. players that were any good to even think about it. And now they had 40 that were really good, and I could come up with a few more that didn't even make it. And I was like, wow, you know, just imagine if you couldn't even make it. So all those guys conceivably could get drafted. And like I said, that's a pretty big deal.
Wow. That's, I mean, just the amount of credentials alone makes my head spin, but
I know, but we didn't see a lot of guys like Steve Yzerman was there. I never saw him. So there were some guys we just never saw because they hung out in the suites because they probably didn't want to get questioned
right.
about the lockout, you know, so which
no,
is understandable.
No. Yeah, I wouldn't expect which, that. You know, they're there for a different purpose entirely. They're not here. Why haven't you? You could see a credential writer just coming up there. Hey,
oh, yeah.
Steve, how you doing? So about
yep.
that lockout.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to answer it either. It's not
no, it would be kind of rough, and I think that was what they were trying to stay away from. So that's fair. But I'll tell you, as an example, Seth Jones, as we know, he plays for Portland. And this is a kid who got – I don't know who his travel agent is or if it was a flight problem or whatever, but it seemed like he had multiple stops and ended up getting in into Buffalo yesterday at 10 a.m. And then there was a practice at around 12. And then I guess, you know, he had his power nap and then played in the game, scored a goal. And now I understand that, you know, he's 18 and we could do a lot of things when we were 18, but still, you know, that's unbelievable considering he's at a game that's highly scouted, a lot on the line, a lot of expectations, and I think he exceeded expectations. And I was thinking to myself, back in the day, if you were an American defenseman with his kind of size, you would have gotten drafted in the first round just because of that. But he could really play. I mean, he could skate. He's got an amazingly long stick. He's 6'3", but when he's reaching for pucks, he's reaching halfway across the rink. He intimidates guys. He's faster than guys. He can get to loose pucks. So I'm not telling you he's going to be the number one pick because he's not. But I can tell you that he was playing on a different level than anybody else in that game, and there were some real good players. So he's going to be fun to watch in the World Juniors, that's for sure.
So who were some of the other standouts?
Some of the other standouts. Another really good one was Ryan Fitzgerald. And everybody will remember Tom Fitzgerald played with the Panthers and made it to the Stanley Cup. Known for face-offs, but I'll have to tell you, Ryan is going to be known for a lot more than that. He really can create things in the open ice. He's got great wheels, and he wins every face-off. So he's got the offensive ability that Tom didn't quite have and the other attributes that Tom did have. And, again, just a smart kid, savvy kid, because, you know, his dad played in the league. So that's another guy who, you know, I could envision being somewhere late first round, early second round. He's not huge. I don't have his stats handy. Let's see what they tell me. I might have them handy. But he's not huge or anything, so that's something where that's why I think he might go a little bit lower. Let's see. I got my trusty book here. Give me a sec. But he was a big standout. He won the MVP award for the game. There was a lot of focus on him. Let's see. So that was another guy. I'll give you another couple in a second. I'll tell you that my eyes are tired from the drive. All right, let's see. Ryan. Oh, wrong team. You know, there was Team Housley and Team McClanahan. And Team McClanahan played like a bunch of Herb Brooks disciples. And that's exactly how McClanahan said they were going to play. And
yep.
And they won 5-1. And the score wasn't important, but the team played like that. 5'10", 165. So that's
right.
That's where, you know, Fitzgerald's going to probably not be on that upper echelon of first round because of that.
Well, at least that was better than his rumored weight at first, Russ, which there was a bit of hubbub about. Some people were saying he was as low as 154 pounds.
No way. Wow. I saw him.
Yeah,
I stood next to him.
Was,
no way.
There's been a couple players this year, more than usual, that I've noticed, at least to the scouting ranks. I forget the name of the guy, but I remember them listing him as 5'11 and 150 pounds. And I'm like, that can't be right.
not right.
Of course, I have you know, the guys.
Well, what's Ryan Nugent Hopkins at? He's what, 5'11, 165 maybe?
He's probably about 175 now, but that's
yeah,
it. I
okay.
mean, and I was legit worried that maybe he would get worn down in an NHL season. And, you know, you can make the argument maybe injury played into that, but he certainly mm-hmm. could handle his own. So,
yeah,
you can't get too crazy about the weight. I mean, we all want these guys to be stockier than what they are because mm-hmm. we know that you have to be pretty strong in the NHL. But, you know, some guys are wiry, and we have to just sort of – see which ones are and which ones are legitimately weak. I mean, it's hard to sometimes figure that out. Like a guy, as an example, who we're still trying to figure out if he's ever going to be strong enough to play in the NHL would be like a Christian Thomas.
Right.
Now, that's a guy when I saw him get drafted was definitely under 160. Hmm. Now, he's over that now, but still don't know if he has NHL strength. So, you know, that's where you sort of have to figure that one out. But these kids are 18, so it's really, again, go back and look at your, when you graduated high school, how thin you were and what you look like now. I mean, Chris, you're kind of puffy now. I mean, you can admit it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've gone through the stages, Russ. Let's see. let's see. I played goalie a lot for a while, so I was up well over 220. I went back all the way down to about 150 something to play forward in the league because it was in the Palm Springs area. Now I'm at about a nice 180 right now. So I'm feeling pretty good. So I've seen the weight changes, and especially when I was 18 and I was in semi-pro, I was about, I'd say, 5'8 or so and maybe about 165 pounds. And I was considered relatively small by my coach, more because I didn't have the arm span.
Right. It's always something. I mean, we could always find different things to nitpick with these players. We can. And that's why I don't try and do that, because we know that certain things are going to happen, so that's where the projections come in. Another guy who really impressed me, that whether people talk about him or not, I don't know. He's a defenseman. His name is Scott Savage. Now, he's another guy. He's a California kid. And, again, if you think about all the players now that are going to start having an impact in the NHL from California, guys like Emerson Edom, and it's just, yeah, it didn't happen 15 years ago. And this kid could play. Now, I'm not telling you he plays a complete game, because I didn't see a complete game out of him, and this is the only time I've seen him so far. So we have to just sort of wait and see. But his size is another one. He's another one who's about 100 and – I think he was 6 foot, 168 pounds. Let's see.
That's separate, yeah.
Where was he playing in California?
Hold on. I'll get you that, too. Let's see. He was playing, yeah, he's 6 foot, 168, NTDP, but he's from San Clemente, and he's going to go to BC. So I imagine, you know, a little time in the BC weight room, and he'll be pretty good. But as a defenseman, he really, he skates well, he handles the puck well, he's got a really good first pass, and he's got a tremendous one-timer. And so he's the kind of guy where, a little time at BC, somebody takes him in the third round, and he gets a little more bulk on him, and you might have something. You might have a power play quarterback on your hands, you know, 4 years, 3 years, 4 years down the line. And I think that's where you have to look at a lot of these guys, because when we're going into this game, I think they said they had 6 or 7 A prospects and whatever B ones or whatever C ones, but these were beginning of the cycle guys, and we know how fickle it gets by the end of the year. And I saw Central Scouting was there, and so they'll have everybody ranked again, and you can't get too crazy about it, because if you watched whatever happened with Sean Couturier, and then you watched what happened with Grigorenko, who won Player of the Week honors already, you know, Grigorenko is going to be a star in the NHL. I don't care where he got drafted, what position. Buffalo did great to get him, and other teams who passed on him will be sorry. And it's just, right. You know, if a kid gets mono, and that's going to make a kid, two drafts in a row, well, not in a row, but two drafts in 3 years, where if somebody's listed as having mono and then all of a sudden they drop like a stone, come on. That just seems crazy. But it happens.
It's in the water.
Yeah. It just, you know. And once Grigorenko said to me, he, you know, it was funny because the day before the draft, I still was wondering, why the hell are people talking about this guy going, you know, middle to late first? And then a couple minutes into his interview, I asked him about training, and he said, you know, with the mono, I haven't been able to train fully yet. Right after this, I will be. And that's it. And that's enough to scare him off.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The goaltending wasn't at what I would say elite level. I saw a kid, Cal Peterson. He looked pretty good. But I didn't see, you know, anybody who I felt was as good as, like, a Jack Campbell was at that age or Gibson. So I don't know if we if we have that out of this game and goaltending. Another kid, Evan Allen, let's get his height and weight. He was pretty impressive. 5'11", 195. He certainly played pretty big. A Michigan kid, and it's kind of unbelievable that some of these guys born in like 95. So he's probably a USH.
Man, I was out of college by then.
But yeah,
something wrong with that.
Yeah. So, but again, this is a guy who. It's amazing how good a skater some of these kids are, and this guy was just gliding across the ice. That's how good a skater this was, and he has a really good fast shot. And when he's down low, he knows what to do with the puck. And he was very noticeable out there. And again, he's a forward. And this is a guy who you could look at and say, you know, I see a lot of guys like a Jason Zucker in him, and so like early second, and that's there's a lot of. I would say there's a couple of first-rounders here, but I'd say there's a lot of second-rounders here. And I think that's good, though, because I think that's why a lot of the teams were there, because let's face it, I mean, there's a lot of second-, third-round gold now in the NHL, and especially in the cap era where it seems like the cap might even go down. And that's where you have to really dig deep. Another kid, Quentin Shore, who I believe is Drew Shore's brother, played real well, scored a goal, plays just like him. Hard work. Excellent second effort. He's a guy who could skate well. Let me look at his size. Like I said, and that's why another reason Seth Jones was just at that age to be like 6'3". And what weight did they have Seth Jones at? Let's see. Seth Jones, 6'3", 210 already. So you know he's going to end up being like 225, 230. Well, probably 225.
Wouldn't be surprised if he grows another inch or two either.
Right. Wouldn't shock me. And his dad, you know, was a football player, gave him good advice, told him not to do anything stupid on the ice or off the ice. And he even said, look, I know, you know, sometimes players will do stupid stuff, but he was trying not to. And he's pretty funny. And so he's another. So anyhow, getting back to Quentin Shore, because we already know his brother is a pretty good player. Quentin Shore, yeah, 6'1", 190. And again, he's going to Denver. So he's from Denver. And yeah, he's going to Denver. So he's probably looking at third rounder. Now, another one who I think you could be looking at a first rounder is Hudson Fashing. Now, Hudson Fashing, Fashing, it's kind of a different kind of spelling, 6'3", 214 already.
Holy. Wow.
And actually, I don't even think he's available this year. He's probably a next year, because he's a 95. He's a next year guy. And he was a guy who had a really good impact in that game. I have to read my scribble, too, so you have to bear with me as I go on my sheet and look, because I probably wrote things about 20 or so players. Fashing, he was the best playmaker on the ice, him or Fitzgerald. He just had great vision. He was able to set up guys to the point where he would do the tic-tac and the other guy would be the toe and they would tip it in. And sometimes he would be the tippy, sometimes he would be the guy that could set it up. But always in on scoring opportunities. Like I said, good size, good skater. And so he's a guy that if you look at that size and you figure he has a nose for the net, that's a guy who's probably destined to be a first rounder. And I think you probably have two or three other guys like that. And even a guy like Fitzgerald, like I said, I think he'll end up going first round. It's just a matter of where. Jacob Montgomery is another one. Let me look up the numbers on him, where he's from. But like I said, I mean, the U.S. program is deep now. I mean, and it's deep to the point where I don't think I saw anybody there that didn't have potential to be a pro hockey player. So I think right out of the gate, That's a really positive thing. Let's see. Jacob Montgomery. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Come on.
Come on, please.
And Justin Bailey couldn't play because he got hurt. So that was a guy that people were were looking to see, but we couldn't get to see. Montgomery is 6'1", 190 out of Minnesota. This year he's playing for Sioux City. Next year, University of Nebraska, Omaha, which is turning into a real good hockey school. And so this is another guy where if you look at him on the ice, he's a really good read and react guy. Like, he's got excellent hockey sense already. And to me, that's and it's speed. So he basically, he sees everything out there, sees it fast, can move fast already, was in on some scoring opportunities. And so, like, he's a guy that definitely stood out to me because he can make things happen. I didn't necessarily care if who scored and how they scored it, except for, like, maybe Seth Jones's shot, because it was one of those where they've been working on his point shot, and he did crank it up, and it just seemed to just go through everybody until it got down to the goalie, who had just a little screen, nothing major, and he didn't seem like he could do anything with it, and it was just because he had, you know, full extension. So, now, like I said, very successful game. Some of these guys will go next year. Some will go the year after. So it was good for whoever got out there to see him, because I think as a prospect guy, if you weren't there and you're still online trying to talk about these guys, then you didn't really see what you needed to see. And that, to me, that was a big reason I went, because now we'll start to see these guys in under 18, under 20 action this year, and I'll already be familiar with them, so then I'll be looking to see how they've improved, so I'm a step ahead. And that's a nice place to be, because unless you get out to the kickoff classic, for a lot of these USHL guys, you can't see them that easily.
Yeah, the access isn't like what you...
It's just they're hard, they're far away places for us in the Northeast, and you know, if you live around Nebraska, you could see them all.
Right. Yeah. You're in the good old breadbasket or the heartland. You're good to go. If you're stuck up somewhere in Boston or the northern annals of New Jersey or the southern, it might be a little difficult.
It was like 2 years ago. We went, or is it three now? I think it's three. We went to the I want to say two. 2 years ago, we went to the Kickoff Classic, and it was out in Iowa, and we had to fly out through Nebraska. So I go Jersey, Philly to Nebraska, and when I do that, I get to the airport, and I'm waiting for Shane Malloy to come in, and he's the guy I do my XM show with, and we're going into our eighth year. It's getting to be an old show now. And so I'm waiting on him, and I notice it's like 8:15, and I'm like, I'm kind of hungry. Maybe I should wait for Shane. And I'm like, no, you know what? Let me get something to eat. I get something to eat, and 15 minutes later, everything gets shut off. All the lights, all the everything except for the TVs. And I was like, man, that was maybe the best decision I'd made all day, because they rolled up the sidewalks at like 8:30.
Yeah, it's a different world out there. It really is. I remember being up in Minnesota to scout something, and literally at 8 o'clock central, the whole world shut off, it seemed. And I'm like, what? It's like, wait a minute, I'm from the city, and that sort of thing just does not happen. But about 20 seconds left on an entertaining, fast-paced edition of the Hockey Writers. We're going to go a little bit into overtime, as we often do here, and we'll talk about a little more hockey talk. Until next week, for Josh, Timmy, Russ, Ross, and the gang, this is the Hockey Writers Live signing off. Have a great night, everybody.